Stand by. Your Steve Jones Show audio is loading now. SteveJonesShow.com podcasts are sponsored by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street, Sunbury, the beverage supermarket.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
It's great to be with you on this Friday, and I really enjoyed my trip a week ago to Brewers Outlet. Picked up those barrel pickles. Corey gave me a sampler. The barrel pickles were my favorite. But it's obviously much more than that, because you want a sampler? Why don't you sample some microbrews, sample some domestic imports? I mean, you can. They have it all there. Soft drinks, fresh hot roasted peanut snacks. Stock up for the weekend right now at Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury. We're in the Sunbury Motors Studio, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Key, routes 11 to 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Steve Jones with you, along with the storyteller, Captain Kangaroo, Kevin Herr.
I loved that show when I was a kid, I have to admit.
Yes. Sean Carey is Mr. Green Jeans. See, a little sidekick. He's your Steeler sidekick. Did you faint?
No. I'm just picturing him in green jeans, that's all.
Yeah, well, so is a lot of people right now. All right, let's go to Baltimore. My broadcast partner for the last 10 years, Dick Girardi, who is also one of the top horse racing writers in the country, won the Eclipse Award for a series of articles he wrote about Barbaro back in 2008. Dick, welcome. It's great to have you with us, Dick.
Hey, Steve.
Hi, buddy. How you doing today?
Good, though.
All right, California Chrome. When we watch that race 2 weeks ago, you usually like to look at a horse go the next 50 to 100 yards after to see you know what they've got in the tank. What did he have in the tank once he crossed the line?
Enough. Yeah, I mean, he certainly didn't look like he was totally spent. And this is actually 110 yards less than the Derby, so I don't think that this. He was going to be any kind of an issue. It's just a question, is he still in the same great racing form he would have been in 2 weeks ago?
The horse, and we all know the horse has had its ups and downs physically this week. The latest report is that he's fine, but still, what have you heard or seen in terms of watching the horse work?
Yeah, I don't think it's an issue. It's just a minor throat thing, or like a blister. For us, it would be like a tickle in the throat almost. So, yeah, I don't see it as much of an issue at all.
All right, this is one of the great stories, because obviously his trainer was the exercise writer for Swaps. Is that part of what makes this job of covering this sport exciting for you, to see stories like this develop?
No question. Yeah, I mean, there's a guy who accompanied Swaps on a railroad car as an 18-year-old in 1955, wins the Derby, as he was sort of an exercise rider. A stable hand back then, Stephen, he was sleeping on a sleeping bag. And then here he comes back 59 years later as a 77-year-old trainer and wins the Derby. So, yeah, those kind of stories really don't happen in any other sport.
It's also a California-born and bred horse. Rare that they have success at this level. Why has that been, considering, you know, people think of California and they think of racing, but not at this level?
Yeah, it's a really good question. Their breeding program is just never been that expensive out there. So the racing obviously has been great, but they're mostly Kentucky breds or horses from some other state. And I just think it's mostly just because it hasn't been supported that much at that level. So I think that's really the issue.
Right. California Chrome runs usually in the top three as usually the race develops. There were 10 horses in the Preakness this time around. Because of the lack of traffic, does that benefit him?
It may or it may not, because it's interesting. He's down on the inside in the three post, Steve, so there's horses with speed outside of him. And it's actually easier to find a horse in a 10-horse field than a 19, and he'll be the one with the target on his back. So from that standpoint, I think that it could be a little easier for the other jockeys to get a sense of where he is and potentially keep him locked in there for a while. That'll be Victor Espinosa's job to make sure early on in the race he puts him in a really good spot so he's not trapped in.
All right, now the next one. You mentioned speed on the outside. Where does that speed on the outside come where either they can try and run him ragged early or else can come on late?
Yeah, I think the style of the race, there's more early speed than anything. Social inclusion is probably the second best horse in the race, and he's certainly fast. Iron is fast. There's three or four horses that are potentially fast enough, depending on how their riders ride the race, to keep the favorite in what potentially could be a difficult spot. But that'll be Espinosa's job, just to early on make some decisions in the first few hundred yards to try to get him at a good spot.
Social inclusion really was pointed toward this race. I think social inclusion ran at Gulfstream back in February. And now is going to why point to this one in their minds?
Well, they realized they weren't going to probably be able to make the Derby. He didn't start running until February, so he didn't have enough points. So he was sort of on the outside looking in for the Derby and kind of inexperienced. They sort of said, well, points weren't going to be an issue for the Preakness. They were just going to try to get him ready for this race.
And he, of course, is the son of pioneered of the Nile, who was the Derby runner-up, but 5 years ago, so...
Right, he was used those second of the year my Ed Bird one.
Yeah. Now, Ride on Curlin obviously goes through and is one of those that carries on. What makes Ride on Curlin an interesting horse to you?
I think style. With a lot of speed in this race, he's a horse that's going to be coming more from the back. And if the race does fall apart a little bit because they went too fast too soon, I think he's potentially a dangerous horse coming from behind.
What about Calvin Burrell's style on Ride on Curlin?
Yeah, I mean, he's obviously best at Churchill Downs' home track, where he's won those three derbies in 4 years. But, yeah, I think he'll fit. He actually rode the horse last time, Steve, and he's not going to ride him this time. Joel Rosario will ride him.
Okay.
And I don't think they were particularly happy. It wasn't one of Calvin's best moments. He tried to come up the rail at the Derby, and it just didn't work. But this time with Rosario, maybe the style will be a little different.
It's a mile and 3/16, and as you and I have talked about before, I mean, if you lay Churchill Downs over Pimlico, it's just the width of the track is the only thing that's different. It's not tight turns. And so that doesn't come into play in this one. How the weather this week, has the weather played any role in training, especially the last couple of days with so much rain?
Yeah, I mean, this morning it was a mess, so yeah, it was difficult to train. But I think all the horses that needed to get out there got out there and did what they needed.
What about the grind of this? I mean, it's been, you know, there's new speed in this race. There's a couple carryovers in this race, including Chrome. What about the grind of running 2 weeks apart? Because those who are about to do this have never run 2 weeks apart.
Yeah, correct. And I don't think anybody really knows what effect it'll have until they run the race. But yeah, in top class horse racing, it's not done except in the Triple Crown race.
Then give me.
Oh, yeah, it's one of those imponderables. You can't really know until it happens.
Then give me an idea, Dick, what trainers do. Okay, considering that they plan out where they're going to go. Do they train the 2 weeks in between different than the rest of the year? And if so, how?
Not necessarily. I mean, they probably will not have a workout. That would be the only biggest difference because they know the horse is already in shape.
Yeah, that's true. What makes Chrome a special horse to you from what you've seen?
The fact that he's got that early speed to get great position, and then he has that great acceleration that you see at the Derby and other races. And it's unbelievable that quarter-mile burst he has where he just runs away from the field. So when you have those two attributes, that makes you a really dangerous horse.
Yeah, no question. Dick, and then one final question before I let you go. The Derby, in terms of time, and I'm doing this in a relative, obviously, a relative sense, was rather pedestrian in terms of how quickly it was run. Now, you just have to beat everybody else in the field, but is that a concern for Chrome's people that, you know what, it really was not a blistering time on what was a decent track that day?
Yeah, I think a little bit. I think you're not quite sure what it means because on paper he would have been able to run a lot faster. And why that didn't happen in that race, I think, is hard to figure exactly. I think it at least has to give them some pause. I would agree with that.
Dick, thanks so much. Appreciate the time. I know you got 1,000 things going on, especially with the race tomorrow, but thanks a lot.
You got it. Okay, Steve. Thank you, buddy.
All right, Dick Girardi. Joining us from Pimlico, Kevin taking meticulous notes because Kevin loves the ponies himself. I know you do. And you took meticulous notes. What did you get out of that?
Hang on. You're interrupting my notes.
We'll take a break. We'll come back with the Kevin Herr analysis. Shake my head. On News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Sunbury Motor Company has been satisfying more customers and selling more cars since 1915. Have you ever sat back and really thought about that? For almost 100 years, Sunbury Motors has been here for you. Four generations strong. That alone won't make you buy your next new Ford from SMC. But that reputation, plus these deals, will. Buy a brand new Ford Fiesta for only $12,810. New Focuses start at $15,915 at Sunbury Motors. SMC has always been the dealer you think of if you want a new Ford truck. Brand new 2013. F-150 crew cabs are discounted $9,600, starting at $34,939. If you want to buy a new Ford, it's really pretty simple. A 99-year reputation of satisfying customers, the largest Ford inventory in six counties, and thousands of dollars of savings makes SMC your preferred Ford dealer. Sunbury Motors Ford in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury. And at sunburymotors.com.
The best get-togethers start with a trip to the beverage supermarket, Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street, Sunbury. Why? Because Brewers Outlet has not only a great selection of beer, including imports and microbrews, but also a lot more. Brewers Outlet has water, soda, they roast their peanuts every day, and you can't forget about stopping by the pickle bar. Look for great deals on wine coolers and all your favorite snacks. Before you enjoy those special times with family and friends, make your visit first to the beverage supermarket, Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street, Sunbury.
Kevin was talking about telling great stories. Art Sherman, of course, is a great story. He's the trainer of California Chrome. And here's a guy who's been the exercise rider for Swaps, the 1955 Derby winner. I mean, you know, there you are at the age of 18, and that's what you're doing. And Sherman became a licensed jockey, worked out of Hollywood Park. One of the big wins of his life was beating Eddie Arcaro one year. And Arcaro looked at him and said, you know what, you ran a good race, son. I mean, that was big. And Sherman just got into training horses starting in 79, and now, of course, he hits the jackpot with California Chrome. But Art Sherman's a great story. I know Kevin talks a lot about stories. This is a legitimate great story. Legitimate great story. Here's the problem. Not everybody has a great story.
Well, but okay. See, that's why I like NBC's coverage of what they did with the Derby and what I'm assuming they're going to do with the Preakness as well. There was plenty of time to tell stories in horse racing, so that's why I enjoyed their coverage.
Yes, Kevin, because the race is 2 minutes.
Right. That's what I said. Plenty of time. Plenty of time to lead up to it.
Broadcast is ours. There's only 10 horses at the Preakness. They could do a 60-minute expose on each horse. Okay? There's only 10.
Steve, I got Tony from Shamokin checking in.
Tony, how are you today?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks, bud.
25 years between Citation and Secretariat. And then in the 70s, we had three Triple Crown winners, which have been now 35, 36 years since we had one.
Yeah,
how
it's what it says, 14.
How important do you think that is to horse racing to have another one real soon?
Extremely important, I think, because I think they need to have a star. And I think that's something that I think that you find in any sport, Tony. I mean, we're now become in sports a star-driven deal. You look at Peyton Manning and Tom Brady and Andrew Luck. I mean, quarterback, star-driven deal. Ben Roethlisberger, star-driven deal. You get the hockey, it's Sidney Crosby, maybe Ovechkin. I don't know about that. You know, basketball, it's LeBron James, it's Kevin Durant. I mean, and the NBA hit the jackpot. I mean, they got the Spurs and Duncan. They got Durant and Oklahoma City. They've got LeBron and the Heat. And this is the same thing in this. They need a star. Now, I've kidded Kevin about the Indianapolis 500. Indy has no star.
Okay, oh. That's something that's happened over the years where they've lost it. It used to be A.J. Foyt, Mario Andretti, people like that. Who's the star of Indy now? I mean, really.
I have no clue.
That's it. I mean, you got Ryan Hunter-Reay, and he doesn't have that much star appeal, Kevin. Quite honestly.
Okay, Kevin, he's got as much star appeal as the kid driving the dragster down the street.
I totally agree.
And that's what horse racing needs, though, Tony. They do need... Secretariat brought it back because Secretariat was a star, and then all of a sudden there was that run with Slew and Affirmed, and everyone thought Spectacular Bib was going to make it four in the decade, but it then got hurt before the Belmont and ran third.
Yeah, well, but that's what Smarty Jones and Barbaro was up for that disaster. When I seen Hollywood Park last year, I thought this isn't good.
Well, you know, I agree with you, Tony, up to a point. Hollywood Park closing was a surprise to me, and that's not good for the sport, but there's so much online betting now.
That's what it is.
And you have the combination of the casinos. Like, you go down to Parks now. Parks is a gorgeous casino to go with the racetrack. Yeah, and Pocono Downs may be harness racing, but they have it. Grandville has it. And I think when Governor Rendell passed the gaming law and combined it with horse racing, he did help the sport in the state.
Oh, the sport in the state. I mean, Barbaro and Smarty Jones were Pennsylvania horses.
Yeah. Was a Fleet Alex a Pennsylvania horse, too?
Fleet Alex was a Pennsylvania horse.
Yeah. Yep. As I sat and watched a race with his owners one day down at Parks, Dick introduced me to them. And
I like riding with curling tomorrow, and it has absolutely nothing to do with the sport of curling.
Well, you know what? Well, he had a good stretch run.
Yes, he did. He has a great jockey, Calvin Burrell.
Yeah, he's not going to ride him tomorrow.
Yeah.
Burrell's not going to ride him tomorrow, though.
Oh, he's not going to ride him.
No, Joel Rosario, I believe.
Joel Rosario. The owners of riding curling were not happy with how Burrell rode him in the Derby, and they replaced him.
Oh, at least they put an Italian up.
There you go, Tony.
Hey, well, listen, hey, have a great day.
Yeah, I will, Tony. Thanks. And Tony's absolutely right when it comes to this. The Triple Crown Series needs a star. Now, what's happened over time is that horses are running fewer and fewer races. And they're picking their spots when to run. And I mentioned the horse that ran at Gulfstream Park that's just pointed toward the Preakness.
Social Inclusion, is that the one?
Social Inclusion. Right? Didn't run the Derby. Now, if California Chrome survives tomorrow and wins, he's got an incredible uphill fight ahead of him in the Belmont, because you're going to have fresh horses running a mile and a half that haven't run the other two races. And that is one of the reasons why I think we have seen a failure over the years of horses. Smarty Jones lost by a nose. I thought Smarty Jones had it. And I think that... I just think that that's been a big reason. I mean, I think you're seeing more and more trainers point their horse toward a specific race, and the one they keep pointing to is the Belmont. There seems to be fresh legs in the Belmont every year, and when you get a horse that's won the first two legs, they're not accustomed to running three competitive races in a five-week span. It's a big part of it.
And I think from a handicapping standpoint, the toughest thing about this is the fact that you can't really take the Kentucky Derby performance and lay that over the Preakness and say, okay, here's how I think things are going to pan out, because half the field didn't run it. So even though it was a slow Derby, it may not be a slow Preakness because it's half the field's different.
Yeah, California Chrome, I mean, there's some horses like to come off the pace and win. Secretariat was like that. Secretariat liked to come off the pace to win. That's why when he ran the Belmont, everybody got freaked out because he ran to the lead. That's because the horse just wanted to run, All right, and Ronnie Turcotte understood that. Hey, look, I can feel it. This horse just wants to run, let her run. But people watching it were horrified because they're like, what's he doing? Because he's an off-the-pace horse. California Chrome's a horse that's going to hang in the top three the first three quarters of the race and then make his move and then get it done. The question is with the other speed in the race, and yeah, and you don't know. I mean, social inclusion, I think what last ran in the Illinois Derby.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't know what was in the Illinois Derby, do you?
No. You know the other one to watch out for is Bayern. Bayern is one of those quick ones, and if the pace is slow, may just stay out ahead and stay for the rest of the race.
Yeah, well, and we'll see how the track reacts, because obviously, you know, it was raining down there earlier today, and the track was a mess. Now, they should be able to smooth it out. If it ends up being a fast track, I think Chrome's in good shape. But that is tomorrow.
I still like the way that horse finishes the race, though. I mean, you talked about it before the Derby. You said to watch the horse at the cool down, and I was watching the horse at the cool down, and it definitely looked like there was more in the tank.
Yeah, a lot more in the tank, except the one thing I didn't like the fact that his jockey kind of pulled up with 5 yards to go. I
didn't think that actually happened. I thought it was just the way I saw it.
No, he pulled up with 5 yards to go, you know, which I think, you know, took a fraction off his time. It was a rather pedestrian.
Yes, it was.
I mean, Kentucky Derby. That doesn't matter. Okay, they tell you all you have to do is beat the other 18. And they give you roses. If you beat the other 9 tomorrow, they give you black-eyed Susans.
And not the drink either.
Well, something tells me you'll be having the bag on those by 5.
I haven't made one of those in a while. I'll have to look up the recipe.
Why don't we just go?
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
If it's Friday, it must be Brewers Outlet. And if I'm going to Brewers Outlet tonight, I am stocking up for the weekend. And I'm doing so with the best in imports, microbrews, and domestics. I'm doing so with the best selection of soft drinks, snacks, hot, fresh roasted peanuts, and I'm going to the pickle bar, and the barrel pickles are going to be in my hands. It's all at Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the Beverage Supermarket. They flat out get it done. They are the number one stop before any weekend. We're in the Sunbury Motors Studio, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors, Keywords 11 to 15, Hummel's Wharf. Thanks to Dick Girardi carving out some time for us today to talk about the Preakness tomorrow. All right, let's go west, because big news made today in Pittsburgh with the Penguins firing Ray Shero, but not firing Dan Bylsma, saying the next GM is the one that needs to make that determination. So Bylsma twists in the wind. We bring in Tony DeFazio from the Pittsburgh Sports Report. Tony, what's your take on this?
Yeah, I think at the moment is the key there. You know, if this thing unfolds very quickly, then this really isn't anything to talk about. But if this drags on, and if it becomes more and more possible that Dan Bylsma is retained, then we're talking about a shocking, you know, turning of events here today. No one really thinks that's going to be the case. In fact, team president David Morehouse spoke, you know, in public about the possibility of Dan Bylsma not being retained. That typically does not happen, unless, you know, you're a follow with that guy, you know, losing his job. So, it seems to me that they're starting at the top here, and they want to make sure the GM has the ultimate say in whoever the new coach will be.
Do the players like and respect Dan Bylsma?
I think they like Dan Bylsma. I think that there's probably, this is just a guess on my part, but I do think that there's probably been a little bit of a lack of respect or an eroding of the respect for him as a coach. You know, these playoffs, early playoff exits have been just as much on him as they have been on the players. His system has certainly come under fire, legitimately so. His inability to, you know, change on the fly during games, his inability to adjust, his inability to get Sidney Crosby ice space and get him away from the opposition's checking line. That's been a problem in every playoff series over the past couple of years. So, you know, I think this whole thing falls on everybody, Steve, but I do think that the players don't look at Bielsma the way they did 2, 3, 4 years ago.
Alan Vigneault did obviously a great job with the Rangers and was praised over and over again about especially how he handled his lines and his line changes and combinations late in the game. This is also the same guy that was criticized ultimately for everything that happened in Vancouver. He obviously learned from that. Is that a case where the lack of adjustments by the Penguins end up hurting them?
I think so. I mean, you know, when you talk about Alain Vigneault and his ability to adjust and learn from what he did in Vancouver, we haven't seen that adjustment from Dan Bielsma, not just from 1 year to the next, but from 4 years to the next. Going back 3 years, it's been the same things every year that have cost the Penguins in the playoffs, with the exception of goaltending. This year, goaltending stood up, and they still exited early. So, you know, that kind of eliminated one of the possible excuses. And I think that's, you know, part of what ultimately led to where we stand today.
Are the Penguins too much of a finesse team in today's game?
I think they are. I think they are, certainly in the playoffs, and that's what Dan Bielsma's system really depends on. It depends on puck-moving defensemen who stretch the ice with every breakout of their zone. He wants to see 70-foot passes. They're beautiful to watch when they work. There's no question about that. And they work in the regular season when teams aren't as responsible, when teams aren't as committed to playing 60 minutes of defense, when forwards aren't as committed to being responsible in their own zone. And that all changes in the playoffs. Bielsma's system hasn't. Consequently, you're seeing all those turnovers. You're seeing, you know, a ton of finesse and not a lot of dump, chase, and crash the net. That's how teams win. That's what the Penguins haven't done.
Usually, we've seen this happen often, where teams will hire a new coach and the personality and style is completely different. Tito Francona became Bobby Valentine, who then became John Farrell. That's a perfect example. When we see this happen all the time, what kind of coach do the Pens? Do the Pens need a guy that kicks some tail, or what do they need?
I think they do. I think they need somebody who is defensive-minded. I think they need somebody who is not going to listen to the players' every single suggestion. That said, I don't think they need Mike Keenan, you know, circa 1987, but I think they could use somebody in the style of a Mike Babcock, you know, somebody who knows how to handle stars, somebody who knows how to win with finesse-type players, but yet also plays a defensively sound scheme. Jacques Martin, who the Penguins brought in before last season to add some defensive responsibility, could possibly still be a candidate. He was very defensive-minded in New Jersey, almost to a fault. If they feel like that's a guy who has learned from his mistakes in New Jersey or learned what didn't work there, he's somebody who I think could be a candidate.
All right. Which Penguins do you not expect to be in uniform next year, regardless who the general manager is?
I can't see Matt Niskanen coming back. He's an unrestricted free agent. He probably made himself a lot of money this year. He's also a puck-moving defenseman, and they have too many of those. I can't see them spending to bring Niskanen back. Brooks Orpik, also a free agent. Hard to see him coming back. You know, Jussi Jokinen is a guy who probably made himself a lot of money. He was one of the better Penguins in the postseason. He may be difficult for them to retain. I don't think they'll let him walk the way they will Orpik and Niskanen, but he might be too much for them to bring back. And then you get into the guys who are still under contract, and do they consider trading guys? Marc-Andre Fleury has a year left on his deal, Steve. Somebody might, you know, that's not much of a commitment. Somebody might go out and bring in a veteran with a year left coming off a strong postseason like Fleury. You just wonder if there's been too much damage done between Fleury and this team. And a guy who I think they're going to try to trade but are going to have a very difficult time doing that is Chris Letang, $7-some million a year. That's an albatross of a contract. It's an albatross for the Penguins. I think that contract is probably a little bit of what cost Ray Shiro his job.
All right. The last time we talked to you, we talked about the Steelers' first-round pick, Ryan Shazier. Since then, obviously, the draft is now complete, and they had six more rounds afterward. In the end, were the Steelers pleased with the positional balance they got out of the draft?
Well, that's a good question, because those two words, positional balance, are probably what concerns some analysts the most. I think they're happy with the football players they got. They needed a cornerback. They didn't get one until the fifth round. You know, that you're really rolling the dice when you take a corner in the fifth round as far as someone who can contribute early. But they got some football players, Steve, and they got guys who might or might not fit in, you know, strictly into their system. But I think you may see this may be a little bit of a sign of the Steelers going a little bit of away from a strict 3-4 every snap. Ryan Shazier is a guy who can play in the middle, fast, can run to the football, doesn't technically fit into their system perfectly, but they'll find a place for him. And I think they've got a lot of players like that. Dre Archer is another one from Kent State, a little guy, but boy, is he fun with the football. So they got some football players. Whether they fit into their system or not, I guess that's going to be up to the coaches.
So how does it look at corner? Because that went in as the number one priority, and I don't care. I'm with you. You got a guy in the fifth round, as far as I'm concerned. You didn't fill a need in round five, considering that's your number one need going in. So how do they look at corner?
You know, I think there's major questions. I mean, it looks like their starters are going to be the same guys as last year. Ike Taylor is on a very, very steep decline. Cortez Allen was okay. If you put him next to a strong corner, he could be very, very serviceable. And Cortez Allen is young enough that he still could make strides and become a good cornerback in the NFL. But I think they've got major questions there. We know enough about Allen. And Taylor, boy, I think we know too much about Ike Taylor at this point, and I think so do the quarterbacks around the league. So I think that's a major question. They did a good job in the offseason before the draft, Steve, of adding some veteran depth, some guys that can come in and be bodies, maybe be a dime guy, something like that. But if you're looking for guys every snap, I'm not sure Ike Taylor and Cortez Allen are the two.
Tony, as always, thanks so much. Appreciate it, and hope you have a great weekend.
Tony DeFazio, Pittsburgh Sports Report. On the Penguins, the Steelers, and we'll come back with more in a moment. Today's show brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Of the 19 horses that ran the Kentucky Derby, 16 will not run the Preakness. So it's 3 plus 7 to get 10. Finishers 2 through 4 in the Kentucky Derby are all skipping the Preakness to get to the Belmont. So we'll see. Art Sherman says usually takes about 11 days for the horse to recover. 11 days, of course, is come and gone. We are on day 13. So there we are. Art Sherman is a great story. Kevin, I know, loves storytelling. I know it's your deal. Let me give you a hint, Kevin. Not everybody has a great story.
Okay. I think there is. You just have to find it.
Kevin, not everybody has a great story. Okay, what's the great story about your neighbor?
Which one?
Either one. I don't care who. What's a great story about your neighbor? Everybody has a great story. I'm sorry.
They went to Arizona. They went to Arizona. Both my neighbors went to Arizona State. Hey, that's interesting coming from this area.
That's great.
I didn't say it had to be. Listen, it doesn't have to be earth-shattering, moving, or anything like that. A story is a story.
Not everybody has a story.
No. Not everybody has a compelling story. You missed a word there.
Yes, yeah, exactly right. That's why you only tell compelling stories.
Everybody's got a story.
I'm sure they do. But so that's the deal. Now, Art Sherman's a great story. Now, that's a great story. He's an exercise writer. That's how he gets into it. He's the exercise writer for Swaps. Rides in the car, in the railroad car with the horse. Him sleeping together in the railroad car, because somebody has to keep the horse, you know, company, stable. If there's a problem, he has to, you know, whatever. Becomes a jockey. Finally, 79, becomes a trainer. Gets hooked in with this horse. Okay, said he knew right away the horse was a winner.
Yesterday we had Pablo
Del Monte is going to be speeding this horse. Bayram will be speeding this horse. So
here's a good example. Yesterday, Vince Welsh was on the program, talked about rookie Jack Hawksworth. He was ready to become a trainer, had already spent his $1,000 to become a trainer when he gets the call from Brian Herter to drive. That's a story.
Yeah, that's a story. I mean, I agree with that. But here's one of the problems that we have today, okay? When I say not everybody's a story, all right, too many people settle, right? When I delivered the commencement speech 3 years ago in Wilkes-Barre, you know what I told the grad? I mean, I kidded around at the front, and I did a joke at the back. But in the middle, I talked about other things in the middle, such as, you know, tests of character, things like that. But I also said, look, hold out on your dream as long as you can. Okay? Hold out on your dream as long as you can. And a lot of people give advice all the time to not to, hey, look, you got to get going here, okay? You can't hold out on your dream as long as you can. Okay? Now, in sports, some people do hold on to that dream as long as they can, and they end up succeeding. He's an example of that. Usually people that are in sports hold on to the dream as long as they can. Okay, look at Pierce, the first baseman for the Orioles. You know how long he was in the minors? He was at 30 years old. He was playing for the Altoona Curve. Right? So that's why you do have a lot of great stories in sports, because they've had the ability to hang on to their dream longer than most people. Thus, because of that, they find themselves in the spot that they're in today. That's one of the, you know, that they're able to hang on to the dream long enough, or get a break long enough to be in this particular spot. That's why there are more great stories in sports. Because they hang on to their dream longer. Thus, they get lucky and they get to live it. You okay there? Did you die? What'd you do? Faint? You still there?
Yeah.
Okay.
I was looking for something as you were having your conversation there. But, you know, but what I was talking about in the first hour is exactly what you're doing now. Obviously, a longer version of it, because you have the format to do it here. But it's the art that I think that is missing in sports broadcasting now, is what Vince Welsh was talking about yesterday, and sitting on the side of the track and just talking with Jack Hawksworth, and guess what he learns.
Yeah, I agree and disagree with that. I think in TV, take Bucknell. Bucknell wants to take their pregame show and expand it from 30 minutes to 60 minutes.
Right.
Correct?
Yes.
Okay, for football.
Possibly,
right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's what they want to do from Learfield. You know, look, I don't care. I'm not working for Bucknell. I can tell everybody what I want. you know.
I might not be now. Thanks.
No, but I'm saying, but what's the reason behind that? Well, look, what can you sell? Okay, that gives you more time to sell. There's only X amount of time to sell during the course of the game. So like here at Penn State, we have an hour and a half pregame show. Well, that's because they can sell the hour and a half. That's where they can garner extra sales and so forth, and it's up to us to come up with content. And that, you know, we tell the stories during the pregame show. Once the game gets going, you don't have time to sit there. You're like, yeah, here's Hackenberg in the line. He goes, you know, Jack, way back when Christian was a child. You know, meanwhile, the dude's running downfield, and you're like, okay, fine. Why is everybody yelling? Okay, well, it's too busy. It's producer Kevin's to tell a story. But that, it's the pre-game, pre-race, pre-whatever. That's where you can tell the story. Trying to tell the story during the game. Now, baseball, you can. You have plenty of time. You got to give the ball players credit. They give you all the time in the world to tell you about everything because they're walking around. Because, look, baseball doesn't even follow its own rules. Okay? They don't even follow their own rule book. If they followed their own rule book, the games would be 2.5 hours. Do you know that?
Oh, I would love that, because there should be a time. As I've said many times, no one enforces the time between pitches rule.
But, Kevin, the rule is on the books.
I know that.
There's a rule. I mean, Imagine having a sport that doesn't follow the rules. Baseball doesn't follow the rules.
That's why I support having the clock behind the batter so everybody can see it, and there's no way around it.
You know, I mean, it's like, hey, guys, you know, follow the rules. But part of it's the batter's responsibility. So in baseball, you do have time to weave in not just that he's four for his last 26. Now, but you do want to say he's four for his last 26.
Absolutely.
You're telling the listener that, you know, Billy's in a slump over here. You know, they may not want to run him here. Yeah, he's been thrown out four the last five times he's tried to steal. So you're telling the listener something.
There's a little bit of a story there, yes.
Yeah, along the way. But baseball gives you more time. Football, basketball, hockey. I mean, yeah, here you go. Wave a story in hockey.
That's true.
That's why God created intermission. All right.
You know, you had the perfect situation of what you're talking about during the blue-white game. You were talking about, at the time, I think it was Ryan Kaiser, and you had to break away for it because something else had happened in the blue-white game. One of the linemen went down.
I felt bad about that.
But yeah, that's a situation that you're talking about. You're trying to share a story, which was a great story, and one Penn State fans would have enjoyed very much.
Yeah, I felt bad about that, except the reason I broke away from it is that Penn State's line depth is the biggest single issue on the football team. Well, okay, now Wendy Lorenz down. Well, now the single biggest issue to the success of the football team in 2014 is offensive line depth, and he's laying on the field. So that's why I felt compelled to break away from the Ryan Kaiser story, because Ryan Kaiser is going to be a big, big reason why they win. Offensive line depth could be a reason why they lose a game.
Ultimately, I want to be entertained. That's why I'm listening. That's why I'm watching. Entertain me.
Thank you, Maximus. Steve Jones along with Maximus Decimus Meridius. It's been great to be with you all week long.
Man, I'm glad I don't have to sign that name.
It's hard enough when you have to sit there and decide whether there are two R's in her.
Or if there's an E or a U.
Oh, no. Hey, Kurt Smith, in an interview that you're going to want to listen to the podcast probably two or three times. He's coming up Monday.